And we're holding on page 12 in Yuma, the middle of the page, Shom Omrev Scharia, middle of Os Yudbeis. We looked in the Mishnah, we said the Kohen Gadol had to be kept up the whole Yom Kippur night so he didn't fall asleep and become a Baal and possibly become a Baal Keri. So we said that either he would read from parts of Tanakh that are interesting, or if he didn't know how to read them, then people would read to him from various parts of Tanakh. We said Ezra, Eov, Ezra, Divayomim, and then Zechariah ben Kvotel, who was a Kohen who lived at the end of the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, he says that many times I read to the Kohen from Daniel. So now the Gemara tells, Omer b'schai ben Kvotel chola. So Masni le Rav Chanan bar Rava l'chia bar Rav kamei de Rav. Page 12, exactly in the middle, yeah. But exactly in the middle, by the paragraph that begins Omer b'schai ben Kvotel in Yuma. Take a look that you're in Masechta Yuma and not in a different Masechta.
No, I am, but yeah. I don't see where you are.
Well, then there's a paragraph beginning Shom Omer b'schai ben Kvotel.
Okay.
You see?
I am Rav Zechariah.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. Omer b'schai ben Kvotel. That's what I said. So, Masnevet of Chonan bar Rava l'Chia bar Rav. Rav Chonan bar Rava was teaching Chia bar Rav. This is Rav's son Chia. Kamei de Rav in front of Rav. So Rav was sitting there and davening, as we're going to say in a second. He was saying Shema. And Rav Chonan bar Rava was the Malamed teaching Chia bar Rav. So he taught him on Mishnah, and he said, Omer of Zechai ben Kfutal. He said the name with a Kfei instead of a Vei. Omachve le Rav v'yode Kfutal. And Rav signaled to him with his hand, it's not kvutal with a fey, it's kvutal with a vase. The Yerushalmi actually tells a little bit differently that he said kvutar with a, well, he wasn't sure whether it's kvutal with a lamed or kvutar with a resh, and Rav signaled to him that's a resh. Anyway, the question is, why not say it straight out? Why signal? The answer is Krishma have a kori, because Rav was in the middle of saying Krishma at that point. Well, the question is, v'chihai davna mishori. If Rav was in the middle of Krishna, is he allowed to signal and make motions with his hands? When a person is reading Shema, lo yumeis ve'enav, he should not signal or wink with his eyes. V'lo yikrit specif soisav, will make motions with his lips. V'lo yoda ve'esvoisav, or point with his fingers. Rashi points out all of those basically mean to show hints, but you have different words for them depending on the body part. Just like in English, you have winking versus pursing your lips versus signaling with your fingers or whatever. So you have similarly over here. So you shouldn't do that. Vitanya, so therefore, so how could Rav do that? Vitanya, further we learn in a brisa, Rav Elazar chisma omer, when a person is saying Shema, if he does one of these things, signal with his eyes or his lips or his fingers, all of Akos of Omer, the Pasuk says on such a person, you Yaakov have not called on me. Meaning, in other words, you're supposed to be calling on me, Hashem, in Shema, and instead you're not, instead you're focused on somebody else. What's the idea behind the name Yaakov over here? So Marsha explains, we know after all that there's two names for, there's Yaakov and Yisrael represents the more chosh of a name, and Yaakov is the plainer name, related to the word Okev, the heel. So now, in Shema, we say Shema Yisrael. So when a person is laying Shema properly, then he's on that higher level of Yisrael. But when a person is not, when he's not focused on Shema, and instead he's busy winking or otherwise signaling to other people, then he's more on the level of Yaakov. So therefore, v'loy oisi korosa Yaakov, you haven't called me, and therefore you've descended to the level of Yaakov instead of Yisrael. Marsha also points out, we have the famous thing that Yaakov did not interrupt in the middle of his Shema. When he first met Yosef here after 22 years, he was in the middle of saying Shema, and Yosef fell on his neck and kissed him and hugged him and everything, and Yaakov did not, because he was in the middle of saying Shema. So now, when the person does that, then we're saying, V'loy oisi korosa Yaakov, Hashem is saying, you have not called on me the way that Yaakov did in his time. So a person has no business doing that while he's saying Shema. So how could Rav do that? So the answer is, Loi kasha habaperk rishon habaperk sheni. There's a difference between the first section of Shema. There you need more kavana, because the pasuk says, "V'ha'yu advarim eila asher nechem tzav hayom al levavecha." They have to be on your heart, which means that you should be focused singularly on Shema during that paragraph, as opposed to in Perek Sheni. When it comes to the second Perek, when it comes to V'ha'yu and Shemaya, then you're allowed to signal. So in Shulchan Aruch it's brought, even then it should only be the divine mitzvah. So here you have an example of a divine mitzvah to correct the Chanan Bar Rava, that he should teach Rav's child properly, so therefore he's allowed to do that during the second parent. The other Rebbe brings also the fact is we find in Halacha that if a person is in the middle of his work and he's interrupted and say Krishna, then from the second parak and onward, from Vahoyim Shemaya, he's technically allowed to be doing his work while he says Shema. Better not to, and especially nowadays, they certainly don't mind if you take a couple of minutes off your work, but so then the Alter Rebbe explains in Kuntas Achron over there in Simin Samach Gimel, that basically work is also considered a mitzvah katzatz. There is a certain degree of mitzvah in doing work, after all, to provide for your family, so therefore that's a legitimate reason also, but not Samazai. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Tanan Abanan, speaking of the kavana that a person has to have when he's saying Shema. And by the way, you have within that itself, you have the person has to have the highest level of kavana in the first pasuk. Even the rest of the first perek from Vahafta and on, a person doesn't have to have such kavana. The Gemara says in Brachas, Mikan Ve'elach Mitzvah Kriya, from then on, it's primarily a mitzvah to say the words. However, during the rest of the first parak, a person should not be signaling to other people and so forth, as we're saying here in the Gemara, even for a divine mitzvah. From the second parak and onward, then you can. So, Tanan Abanan, V'dibarta Bum, when the Pasuk says you should speak in them, that means Bum V'loy B'tfila. It means you speak out the words of Shema, and you say them out in a way that's heard when it comes to them, when it comes to the words of Shema, but not when it comes to the words of Shemana Esrei. Those have to be said silent. Tosis, but there are other explanations as well. Tosis says a different explanation is that it means, we know the Mishnah and the Gemara tell us in Brachas, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that there are certain things you're allowed to interrupt for in the middle of Shema. Person comes with Nea Yira, with Nea Kovod. You have certain rules when you're allowed to greet somebody or respond to somebody's greeting during Shema, but during Shemana Esrei, not. So that's another meaning of the Dibarta Bumble of Tefillah. In Tefillah, in Shemana Esrei, you have no Heterim to interrupt with Nea Yira, with Nea Kovod, or anything like that. And this is Negea also. You have the whole table in the back of the newer Sidurim about what points in davening you're allowed to interrupt to answer various things, so you have a certain amount of leeway in Shema, except that during the first pasuk of Shema and Baruch Shem, when you have no leeway at all, but in the rest of Shema, you have a certain leeway for certain amens and baruchu and things like that, whereas in Shemana Esrei, you do not. Tosfos Yeshanim brings a third point as well. It also means that Dibarta Bum V'Lo B'Tefillah means we know there are the exceptional Talmid Chachamim that Teirosim Umnosim, classic example being Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. They don't have to interrupt their learning in order to daven Shemana Esrei. However, they do have to interrupt for Kriyashma. So that's another meaning of V'Dibarta Bum V'Lo B'Tefillah. You're obligated no matter what to say the words of Shema, even if you're a Talmid Chacham that Teirosim Umnosim. However, V'Lo B'Tefillah, but you're not obligated to interrupt your full-time learning to daven. Another meaning, continues the Braisa, the Dibarta Bum, means Bum Yesh L'Chorosh L'Sladagar, you have permission to speak in them, in words of Torah, V'loi B'Dvorim Acherim, you don't have permission, Minat Torah, to speak other kinds of things. To speak Dvorim B'Tevim, in other words. In fact, the Rambam lists at the end of the first parak of Pirkei Avos, when you have the expression, when you were kolam ma'ir dvarim me'bichet, and then lo'matosi leguf tov mishsika, so the Rambam divides over there all different kinds of speech that a person might do. He has a whole taxonomy over there. You have like six different kinds of speech, everything from things that's a mitzvah, you have speech that's a mitzvah, for example, Krishma. You have at the other extreme, you have speech that's an outright Aveira, like Lashon Hara and Rechilos and things like that. And then you have a number of different other grades in the middle, things that are mutter, things that are not recommended, and so on and so forth. So here we're saying that the person's speech should be in them, in words of Torah, or the other ones that are in the Rambam's listing over there, of things that are beneficial, but not in Dvorim Acherim. Rabbi Acha says in that connection, V'dibarta Bum, when the Pasuk is saying, V'dibarta Bum means Asei Oisem Keva, make the words of the Torah a fixed thing, that's something non-negotiable by you. V'altasim Arai, don't just make it a casual thing, like you're just going to knock off the words and have done with it. Marsha also says it refers to, for example, the idea a person shouldn't say, you know what, now that I've learned Torah, then I have plenty of free time and I can go learn Chochmas Umas. No, you should always consider Torah as Teva. Torah has to be the most, there has to be the pole around which everything else rotates to the extent that there's going to be Chochmas Chatzonius. It's going to be, for example, as Alta Rebbe talks about, Chesetania, to use them to earn a living, or on a higher level to use them themselves in service of Torah, like the way the Rambam and the Ramban did, but not to think of them as an end in themselves.
That problem arises if you're davening too fast. Even in the Shema, the first line,
yeah,
you go too fast, having a covenant.
Yeah, there is that. So Omar Rava, so in this connection, Rava says, Asoch Sichas Cholan Oveveser. A person speaks mundane talk, which is not necessary for any of these, for any of these purposes, is over on that essay that we say in Shmash. And Emma Vidibarja Bom, Bom Vulevidur Machavin. So therefore, so he's over on that essay. And Rav Acha bar Yaakov, I'm over the lab. Rav Acha bar Yaakov goes further and says he's even over on a lab. Shenemar, this is called a lab Megiri Kabbalah. You find in Nach, a person, Gehelis, Kol Advorim Yegeim, all words are tiresome. Lo yuchal ish ledaber, a person is not able to speak. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk means something like there's no end to what can be discovered and what can be talked about. A person would never be able to say everything that could be said. But here, the Gemara is understanding it in a sense. Lo yuchal, a person is not allowed to speak the things that are yegeim, the things that are wearisome, the things that are a burden to say, and they're not something useful. Meaning, in other words, Marsha says, if it just meant that a person is physically incapable of, first of all, by saying kol advarim yegeim automatically implies that you can't possibly speak everything that could be said. There'd be no reason to continue with the words lo yuchal ish ledaber. And also, if it meant that it's physically impossible to speak everything, then it should say lo yuchal ish ledabrom. That would imply what's holding you back is the fact that there are too many possible words, too many things that could possibly be said. When it says lo yuchal ish ledaber, rather, we're meant to understand, we're saying, says Rav Acha bar Yaakov, that lo yuchal is meant in the sense, you have certain mitzvahs in the Torah that are phrased in terms of lo yisuchal, you're not allowed, you can't, which means you're not allowed to. So the same way here, it means you're not allowed to speak these dvorim you gave. Further on, the Mishnah talks about Bikish Lehis Namnim, if the Kohen Gadol is about to fall asleep, Pirche Kohuna Makin Lefana Be'etzvat Tzuroda. The young Kohenim, Pirche literally means the blossoming ones, because their beards are first starting to blossom and fill out. So they, who were accompanying him all night, Makin Lefana Be'etzvat Tzuroda. They would snap their fingers in front of him using the Etzvat Tzuroda. Rashi explains that Etzvat Tzuroda means the index finger. Tosfos argues, the Gemara is saying that it makes a very loud noise. You can't really make such a loud noise by snapping your index finger. Rather, Tosfos understands it means the middle finger. In different ways of understanding the Gemara uses the expression, we don't have it here in Ein Yaakov, that explains why that finger is called, it's called Tzuroda. So depending on how you learn it, it comes out either the index finger or the middle finger. Anyway, they would snap their fingers in front of him to wake him up because it makes a loud sound. The Gemara in fact tells about one of the Chachamim who was able to snap his fingers like that so loudly that it reverberated throughout the whole Beis Medrash. So the Yerushalmi also uses an expression that they would snap their fingers like to keep the beat while they're singing to him. The Gemara here is going to say that they were singing to him, Kapit L'Chabtilim. So they would use their finger, the Yerushalmi says they would use their finger snapping to keep the beat. Anyway, they would also tell him, Ishi Kohen Gadol, my master Kohen Gadol, Amoid V'Hofig Achas Alaritzba. Stand up and dispel your sleep, and then make your sleep go away with one thing on the floor. As the Gemara is going to explain, they would tell him to do a complicated like acrobatic maneuver in order to help dispel his sleep. This way, while he's once he's doing that, that'll help wake him up. The word behofig means like you have by Yaakov by Yofag Liboy Kilehem in Lahem, like his heart was dispelled, like his heart stopped when they told him Yosef is alive, because he couldn't, or Rashi says, actually, it means like he couldn't believe it, by Yofag Liba, like it was dispelled from him, like he couldn't believe that this is the case. So the same way Hofig over here means to dispel, to banish his sleep. There are other explanations among the Foshim, what exactly it means. Anyway, basically they would keep the Kohen Gadol busy with all these various things until it's time in the morning to shech the Korban Tamid, and then at that point now he's going to start the Avodah, he's going to be too busy to fall asleep anymore. So the Gemara says, when it says va'omrim lo v'chola, they would tell him to stand up v'hofig achas al rizba. What is that v'chola? Omer Yitzchok al hadas means they would tell him, do something a chidush, do some kind of novelty for us. Ma'i, what do they mean? What were they asking the Kohen Gadol to do? Amilei ach v'kida. They would tell him, show us kida. Kida, the Gemara explained like this, you have in many places in Tanakh, you have the expression, vayikoid vayishtachvu, or vayikdu vayishtachvu, or whatever. Kida is a kind of bowing where the person bows at the waist, gets his head down, his face down to the floor, and then lifts himself off the floor to get back into a vertical position using his thumbs. Like he uses his thumbs for leverage to get himself back. It's a very difficult thing to do. And the Gemara mentions in a couple of places that Levi one time tried to do it in front of Rebbe, and in fact he strained his muscle to the extent that from then on he was lame. So it was a very difficult thing to do. So like this, they're telling if the Kohen Gadol was capable of doing it, that he should do that. And that'll banish any sleep from him. Continues the Gemara. Miyakire Yerushalayim, lohoyu yeshenim kol ha'layla. Some of the precious people, some of the great important people of Yerushalayim, would also not sleep all that night of Yom Kippur. Kadeshi yishma kohen gadol kol havara. So the kohen gadol should hear the sound of the noise from the city. Vloite shenachay taftei. And that alone would help him stay awake. That alone would keep sleep from grabbing him. Because psychologically, when you hear noises outside, you realize I'm not the only one who's awake. Other people around the city are awake, and that helps keep you awake as well. So Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Ein ma'asikinos alei b'nevo alei b'chino. They would not keep the Kohen Gadol busy that night by playing harps or violins, even though we do find, as Marsha points out, we do find those are very good for waking a person up. We find by David HaMelech, Ura HaNevo V'chino, we have the famous thing that David had a harp hanging over his bed and starts strumming at midnight and wake him up. So those kind of musical instruments are very good at waking a person up, but they wouldn't do that. Elabapeh, rather they would sing to him with their mouths. They would sing vocally to him. V'hoyu Oimrim, they would say to him in particular, the Pasuk, Im Hashem lo yivne bayis, the Pasuk from Tillin, if Hashem does not build the house, shav omlu voina voy, then the people who built it have worked for nothing. Meaning, in other words, that so they're telling the Kohen Gadol, realize you have to make sure your avodah is l'shem shemayim. If you don't do your avodah l'shem shemayim, then all the effort that you're going to be putting in tomorrow is not going to help much. The same way as the builders of the Bismithah, their effort is nothing if Hashem doesn't want it to be done. So this was a message to him to realize that he should be careful and make sure that his avodah is being done l'shem shemayim. Marsha says that actually you have, if you look at the context of the psukim over there, you also find that that pasuk is uniquely appropriate to Yom Kippur. Because after that pasuk, the next pasuk continues, Shav lochem mashkimei kum, it's worthless for you, it's vain for you, you who wake up early, ma'achri shevas, who stay late, who stay sitting late, oichle lechem ha'atzavim, who eat bread of difficulty, like you're having to work hard for a living, kein yitin ligidei shena, that Hashem instead, Hashem gives to his friends sleep. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is like this, you think you have to constantly be working for a living, and all you're getting out of is lechem ha'atzavim, realize that Hashem can just as well provide for you, like he provides for his friends, and they're able to sleep well, and they're still able to have parnasa. Here, Marsha says, it refers to you're coming early in the morning to the Bes Mikdash, earlier than other mornings. Ma'achre Sheves, the rest of the time they're staying late because after the avodah for the day is done, then they have what to eat. They have the korbanos to eat. Yom Kippur, you don't have that. Instead, Ken Yitin, Li Didoi Shena, the word Li Didoi also means Miloshin Minadid, people who banish sleep from their eyes. So Hashem gives goodness to those who banish sleep from their eyes, which say now you Kohen Gadol, we're keeping you up all Yom Kippur night, so you should know if you don't have the right intentions, then Shav Lachem, then the whole thing is vanity for you. But if you do it the right way, then yes, then Hashem will give you the Yedidei Shena in the source of the fact that you're foregoing sleep for this one night. So the Gemara continues. Tanya Abba Sholem, Afkud Vulan Osim Tach Zechel Mikdash. They used to do that in the Gvulim, in other places outside Yerushalayim, they would also do that as a Zeicher LeMikdash, to stay up all Yom Kippur night. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions this concept that people have the minute to stay up all Yom Kippur night. The Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch says maybe it's not such a good idea, then you won't be able to focus on davening the next day. Nevertheless, in the Machzor, you do have the instruction. The Alter Rebbe says, it's better if you can not to go to sleep, but rather be Oisik and Torah all night. L'maisa, we don't do that, because the Alter Rebbe is saying in Shulchan Aruch, you're not really going to be able to focus properly on davening anymore. Our minute is, we just say the whole Tillim, and then we go to sleep. It's brought even from one of the Rabbeim, I think, that when we say, we have the positive, Ol Chayosam Bara'ov, to keep them alive in hunger, that refers to the sleep on Yom Kippur, which is part of what helps keep you alive during the hunger, during the 25-hour hunger of Yom Kippur, and the fact that you have a good night's sleep. Anyway, the point is, so they used to do that in the Gvulin, El Shechoytim. The problem that developed with that was people were doing Avelis, because you would have both men and women would stay up, and the result is it would lead to a Surim being done between them. Specifically, this doesn't mean everywhere in the world this was happening. Specifically, in Nahodah, which was a major, the center of Jewish life in Babel in those days, was in the city of Nahodah. So there, particularly, you had this problem that men and women together are staying up in Kippur night, and that was leading to problems. So in this connection, the Tertus Mirma, by the way, points out, we have the famous Mishnah at the end of Tainus that says that on Yom Kippur, you have the girls would go out to dance in the vineyards, and they would make shidduchim over there. So therefore, there was more of a tendency to do this kind of thing on Yom Kippur than the rest of the year. In fact, he brings an interesting thing. He says this may be a reason why we learn Parshas Arayos. Why do we learn Perek Yud Ches of Vayikra, which talks about all the Arayos and Yuvay Kodesh and everything, where there's various reasons that the posts can give why we learn them on Yom Kippur. He says maybe this also has to do with it. The fact that there was this problem, that there were men and women together on Yom Kippur, and that was leading to Znus, then that's the reason we doubt to learn that Parsha, to remind us not to do that. Anyway, so in that connection, Amalei Eliyahu Rav Yehuda Achur Rav Salah Chasida. Eliyahu Anavi says to Rav Yehuda, the brother of Rav Salah Chasida. So Rav Salah was a Chasid, but Rav Yehuda also, his brother, was a great person. It could also be maybe Chasida goes back on Rav Yehuda. Anyway, the point is that Eliyahu says to this Rav Yehuda. This is not the regular Rav Yehuda in Shas, by the way. This is a different Rav Yehuda. Anyway, he says, Amitu, now you're wondering, you Jews are wondering, Amai Lo Osa Mashiach? Why is Mashiach not come yet? On the face of it, we're all Bali Torah and Bali Mitzvahs, so how come Mashiach hasn't come yet? And if they ask that already in their times, in the time of the Gemara, imagine how much more so we have reason to ask even more so 1,500 odd years later. Anyway, so Eliyahu says, consider, today is Yom Kippur, the evil Kamo Basulas v'Nahodah. Look how many Basulas people have had relations with because of this problem. We're saying that they're staying up Yom Kippur night, and therefore, and they have nothing better to do, and they come to do this kind of Aveir. Maharsha says, in fact, when Eliyahu is saying to Rav Yehuda, you're wondering why Mashiach hasn't come yet, particularly the question is, on Yom Kippur, they're wondering, on Yom Kippur, the Eved is forgiving all our avedas. Nobody has avedas on Yom Kippur. So why, after any given Yom Kippur, has Mashiach not come? And the answer is, Eliyahu is telling him, because you see that even on Yom Kippur itself, people are doing avedas. So Rav Yehuda asks, what does Hashem have to say to that? Isn't Hashem so disappointed that he gave us this day for kapara, mechila, uslecha, and people are misusing it? Omalei, so the O tells him, Hashem says, sin is crouching by the door. In other words, yeah, people have, the Eved should understand, people have a Yetzahara. Yes. The Yetzahara causes them to do the Aveda almost bao korcham.
How do I get myself out?
Almost like against their will. Yeah, they don't. Hashem Himself knows. The Gemara mentions in Sukkah, for example, that the Yetzirah is one of those things that Hashem created, but so to speak, He regrets creating. And in Brachos, the Gemara says you have Psukim and Tanakh that imply one of them being that Hashem says it's sort of my fault that people do Averis because I gave them a Yetzahara. So therefore, so Hashem, not that Hashem likes it, but Hashem can understand, so to speak, why it is that way. He regrets the Golos also, that's another one. With that said, though, that Torah Tmima says, maybe also Hashem's statement, Pesach HaChatzos Rovitz, is also hinting at, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, when Rabbi Shimon Levi asks, where is Mashiach? And Eliyahu tells him he's sitting by the gate, he's sitting by the entrance of Rome, and he's waiting until Hashem tells him it's time to come. So therefore, maybe he says, this Gemara is also hinting to that. Mashiach is sitting right there by the gate, ready to come. But Chatas Roivet, the Yetzirah, is also crouching over there and preventing Mashiach from coming because of people's avails. Anyway. Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda asked the Satan, my Amar. So what does the Satan have to say to this? The Satan must figure this is a golden opportunity to accuse the Jewish people of doing things wrong. Amalei, so the real answer is no. Satan, be able to put in less later shusala istuni. The Satan has no permission to accuse the Jewish people on Yom Kippur. In fact, Yun Yaakov brings over here, and it's actually, it goes back to Pirkei Avot Eliezer, that Adrabah on Yom Kippur, when the Satan himself sees how we Jewish people are acting, dressed in white like the Malachim, and forgiving each other and so forth, Adrabah, instead of accusing us Jewish people, he comes to our defense. So therefore, he says, hey, they have no permission to accuse on Yom Kippur. Mimai, how do we know that? The word has satan, which now usually we think of him as just satan, but the fact is, Maharsha points out elsewhere that every time that he's mentioned in Tanakh in his role as the accuser, he's always called has satan with the hey. So you have, for example, let's say by Bilam, where he's not coming so much as an accuser, he's coming as an adversary to prevent Bilam from going. So then it just says by Yisyatim Malach Hashem lis Satan loy without the hey. But for example, by Iyov you have the expression Ha Satan by Yeshua when Yitzchak the Kohen Gadol at the beginning of the second Mishnah Mikdash, you have the expression Ha Satan Oyminau Yimino Yigar Hashem B'chol Ha Satan. So always when he's in his role as the accuser, it's always with a hey. So therefore, so that altogether adds up to 364, implying Bahani Isla Rishusi Lastuni. So only 364 days a year does the Satan have the right to accuse the Jewish people. The Yom Kippur, less the Rishusi Lastuni, but on Yom Kippur, because on Yom Kippur, he has no permission to accuse the Jewish people. So even if it's true that people are sinning on Yom Kippur, and in a way we're saying La Pesach Chatas Roiv, that's another point. Maharsha says La Pesach means the Jewish people themselves are making an opening for it by staying up Yom Kippur night, where they mean well, but that ends up opening a door to Aveira. Nevertheless, the Satan has no opportunity on Yom Kippur to take advantage of that and accuse the Jewish people. Eitz Yosef brings an interesting point. Now we're saying that the Malach is called Hasatan whenever he's in his role as the accuser. But still, you have to ask. The fact is, the Hey is just the Hey Hayadiyah. It's just the word the. So why don't we say Satan is Gematria 359, and then it would come out there's five more days in the year when he doesn't have the right to accuse. So Eitz Yosef brings from Yonis and Ivershitz from his sefer Yaris Rash. He says it's true. There are five more days when the Satan can't accuse, namely the 5 days from Yom Kippur until Sukkot. We have the Medrash says that when it says on the first day of Sukkot, Olakachtam Lachem Bayom HaRishon, that it means Rishon Lacheshben Avodas, the first day of the new count of Avodas, because during the time between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, a Jew is busy getting ready for mitzvahs. He's getting the Sukkah ready, his Lulav and Esrog ready, and therefore those days also, symbolically, the Satan has no right to accuse Jews either, because Jews are just too busy doing mitzvahs during that time. And it goes on to talk about the reason, going back to Maisa Bereshis, why indeed it's so, that the Satan doesn't have a right to accuse on Yom Kippur, basically boiling down to that day did not exist when the world was first created, because you had Yom Kippur, because you had Rosh Hashanah. It was an extra long day then, it was like a 2 day long day, and therefore like you have Yom Kippur sort of crowded out. So therefore, so the bottom line is that's what we're saying, the Satan has no right to accuse on that day. Okay. The Mishnah had said, V'loi hoisa kriyas agev ha-magas. So the Mishnah starts talking about, now you have the first avoida of the day. Now this mikdash is Trumas HaDeshen. A kohen goes up to the top of the Mizbeach, and he again has to be the kohen gadol. He takes a shovel full of ashes off the Mizbeach, and he puts them on the ground near the Mizbeach. The Somei Eitzel on the Mizbeach. So the Mishnah describes, usually during most of the year, that was done around Alos HaShachar, and then on Yom Tovim, on Yom Kippur, it was done even earlier, and on Yom Tovim, it was done even earlier than that. So the Mishnah says, "V'loy hoisa kriyas hagever magas," before the kriyas hagever came, "ad shehoisa ha'azorah mleyim Yisrael," the Azorah was already full of Jews. Because there were many people who came to watch the Kohen Gadol's Avodah. So, my Kriyas HaGever. What is this Kriyas HaGever in the Mishnah? Rav Omakora Gavra, Rav Shima Omakora Tanagola. Rav says it means the call of the person. Namely, there was a person in the Beis Mikdash whose job was, as we're going to talk about soon, his official job title was Gvini Koros. So you have, the Mishnah in Shkolim mentions a number of officials in the Beis Mikdash that were in charge of different jobs. And it names them. So the Rishami there in Shkolim brings a machloikas. Is it that the names that are given there are the names of the, of in each job, you have one particular person throughout the whole 420 years of the Beis Mikdash that was the most kosher, who was the greatest tzaddik among them, and his name is the one mentioned in the Mishnah. So for example, as far as this Korah is this one who has the job to announce, you would have, let's say, throughout the whole 420 years of the second Beis Mikdash, you had many people who had that job, each one after the other. Of all of them, one of them, the biggest tzaddik of all of them, was named Gvini, and therefore we use his title for it. Or the other opinion that the Gemara mentions over there is that it's the ones that were in that job that held that office at the time when the Mishnah was composed. There is in fact an explanation that's kind of both. What it is once they had the first person who had this job was named Vinny, let's say, then that became the official job title of all the future holders of that office, no matter what their name was that they were given at their bris. And in terms of this job, they were called Vinny Kores. Anyway. The point is, Rav says that's what it means, Kora Gavra. It means, Kriyas HaGever, Gever means a person. So it means he would make the announcement, Imdu Koinim Lavadas, can Koinim get up and be ready for your Avoida, and Levim for the Duchan, Yisrael for your Maimed. So so Rav says that is Kriyas HaGever. Rav Shila Omakora Tanagola. On the other hand, Rav Shila says it means when the rooster crows. And we know the fact is the word Gever does mean both. That is why Taka we use a rooster for Kaparis, because of that symbolism, because a rooster is called Gever and a person is also called Gever. So this way it's one substituting for the other. So Rav Shila holds that the Kriyas HaGever of our Mishnah is when the rooster crows. Agav, we have the same kind of thing, by the way, in morning brachas, when you have the bracha anosim asechvi vina, you have two meanings of a sechvi. Does it mean a rooster? The Gemara mentions in Rosh Hashanah that there are places where they call the rooster sechvi, or does it mean the human heart, that the person, the human mind has the ability to distinguish between day and night? And it's kind of both. Maybe the rooster crows, and then we understand based on that it's morning and it's time to get up for Avodah Hashem.
Yeah, the Siddurim.
So that's the thing. It's actually, it has a double meaning. It means a rooster, but it also means the human mind. Anyway, so the same thing over here, yeah. So the Gemara tells, Rav Ikla La'astir de Rav Shila. Rav one time visited the place where Rav Shila lived, and where Rav Shila was the Rosh Yeshiva. Come Rav, loy hab amurda l'mekam alei de Rav Shila. There was no amurda available to stand by Rav Shila. Now you have, we know from throughout Shas that the Rosh Yeshiva in those days would usually say he has a huge crowd in front of him. He can't possibly say things loud enough or distinctly enough to, for everybody to be able to understand. So he would say his points quietly, and then there would be an Amora standing in front of him who would explain it louder and explain it more clearly and so forth. He would basically be almost like the Rosh Hashiva's megaphone. For that reason, by the way, the Chachamim of the Gemara are called Amoroyim in the sense they took the view, we're only like explaining to the public what the Tanoim said. We're not really coming up with new ideas of our own. Anyway, so there was no Amora available for Rav Shila. Come Rav Alei. So Rav stood up to be the Amora, become a fire. So, and Rav did not tell anybody who he is. Now, you have to remember that Rav was born in Bavel. He grew up there. But then when he, at some point in his younger years, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He became one of the senior Talmidim of Rebbe. He lived there for many, many years. Only late in life did he move back to Bavel. We're going to learn at the end of our Masechta, we'll learn a little bit, a short story about what one thing that precipitated Rav doing that. That point, by the way, when Rav came to Bavel, that became like a watershed event in the history of the Jews of Bavel. You find in a few places in the Gemara that they speak of Miki Osa Rav Le Bavel. Ever since Rav came to Bavel, it became like a new chapter in the history of the Jews of Bavel. But anyway, the point is that now, when he first came over there to Rav Shila's location, he didn't tell anybody who he is. So he's standing up there as the Amor. Become a Farish. And so Rav Shila was teaching our Mishnah, where it says Kriyas HaGever, and Rav explained, my Kriyas HaGever, Kora Gavra. It means, like Rav types, according to his own understanding, that it means that the person, it means that Gvini Kores made the announcement. So Rav Shila asks him, why don't you instead explain that it means the rooster, the way I hold? And in fact, by the way, usually the halacha is that the amora is not allowed to deviate from what the Rosh Hashiva says. He's basically just the Rosh Hashiva's mouthpiece. He has to teach exactly as the Rosh Hashiva says. But here, Rav is actually a greater Talmud Chacham than Rav Shila. He's only doing it because, as we said, there was nobody else available, so he's not bound by that necessarily. Anyway. So Rav answers him with a popular expression. Abu v'lchori, you have a flute that was played in front of Bnei Chorin, in front of three noble people. Zemer l'gardoi le'im kablo mine. Then you sing this beauty, play this beautiful music in front of the weavers, and they don't accept it. They don't like that. So it's a mushal. In other words, like here you have, Rav is saying, I regularly served as an amora for my uncle Rav Chiya. And I regularly explained in front of him that Kora Gavra means the person made the announcement. He's like, compared to you, he's like a Ben Churin. He's a nobleman in Torah compared to you. So now when I come in front of weavers, meaning lesser quality chachamim like you, then you don't accept that explanation, and you think there should be a better explanation. In fact, Marshall says the point is like, what you're considering only like no better than the crowing of a rooster, as opposed to you should consider it. You should realize that this is beautiful music of Torah. He said, and Rav explains, what do I mean? When I would stand as an amora in front of Rav Chiya and explain his drashas, I would explain that kriyas hagevra means that the person called out. Rav Chiya never objected that that's not right. You are saying that I should be saying that the rooster's crow. You're not of the caliber of Rav Chiya. So it's like this mushal with the flute that the noblemen appreciate the music of it. And in fact, the flute we find in the Bismikdash, for example, the flute was one of the instruments that made the most beautiful sound. And yet, then we come to the weavers, we come to the simple people, and they don't appreciate it. Now Rav Shila realized who this was. Omele Maunihu Rav. Oh, you Rav? Because now he understood. Who would it be that was regularly serving as Rav Chiya's Maturgamon? Was Rav, who was Rav Chiya's Talmud, and in fact he was his nephew. In fact, he was doubly his nephew, because we find in other Gemaras, we had in Psachim, that Rav Chiya was a half brother of Rav's father and a half sister in the other direction to Rav's mother. So Rav Chiya was actually a double uncle to Rav. So who would it be that Rav, so if this person who Rav Shila didn't know who it was, is saying, I regularly was an amora in front of Rav Chiya, who else could it be but Rav? So you're Rav? Nei nachmar. So relax, sit down, sit in a bakavadika place. You shouldn't be serving as my maturgamon when you're so much greater a Talmud Chacham than I am. Amalei, so Rav answers no. Amri Inshi, like the expression people say, itagras lay, once you've been hired out to a person for a day job, puts amre, then even comb out his wool, even though that would usually be something that women do. So in other words, like this, lahatchila, I wouldn't hire myself out for such a job, but once I was already hired as a day laborer, then I'm going to do whatever job the Bala Bas tells me. The same way, once I already started being your maturgamon, being your amora, I'm not going to give up the job in the middle. Maushra brings a somewhat different explanation from the Aruch, that it means you have a poor person who comes from a respectable family, that he goes, he has to find some kind of menial job to earn a living, and they offer him a job to comb out wool, and he's thinking, and what a pity that I descended to such a low level, this is the only work that's available for me. And so the Bala Bas wants to tell him, you know what, fine, don't, it's not beneath your dignity. And he's going to say, look, once you already hired me, then I'll already do the job. So Marsha explains, it means also that Rav Shila is suggesting to Rav, not nei nachmar, doesn't mean like Rashi is saying, sit down and relax and don't be my maturgamon, but fine, given that you're Rav, then fine, you can set aside my pirush and you can rather explain according to your pirush. And so Rav is saying that no, once I was already hired by you, once I've already started the job for you, then I'll continue and explain the way you're saying, even though I don't think it's right that you should be asking for that. Ikadamri, others say, Hochi Amalei, others say that he told him, Malin Makodesh, Vlom Yeridin, you go up in Kedusha, you don't go down. So Rashi says, in other words, this is all part of what Rav is saying to Rav Shila. Given that I, who am a higher caliber Talmud Chacham, have started being Yom Moda, it would be a violation of Malin Makodesh. It would be Meridin, it would be going down in Kedusha to have a lesser person go and finish the job, so therefore I'm going to finish the job regardless. According to Marusha, actually, this is Rav Shila saying, you know what, on the contrary, Rav Shila is saying, I hear what you're saying, Rav, you're saying once you already started the job, then fine, you're already willing to finish it the way that I said. The truth is, though, you should go up in Kedusha, not down. A person has a higher Kedusha than a rooster, so fine, I concede, and I agree that we shouldn't go down, that you shouldn't go downward to have to stay instead of a person. That's a rooster. Rather, you can continue to explain in the way you always have that it means a person. Okay. Yonye Mashiach Gola, Chof Aleph Cheshvin. Now, we have at the end of Sota, you have the famous long Mishnah that tells over there about what's going to happen before Mashiach comes. Be'ichvus Mashicha, Chutzpah is going to be tremendous, and inflation will soar, and young people will embarrass the elder. The elders, old people will have to stand up in front of the youngsters, a son will degrade his father, a daughter will rise up in rebellion against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's own members of his household will be his enemies. Now, there's something Lamal Yusa in all of this. There's an advance. On the face of it, it sounds like society is falling apart. But we know that in Avoida, we know that when you don't look at what situation you're in now, you don't make a cheshbon of that there's what I'm limited to. Even when it comes to simple things in Machshava Dibra Maisa, you have the breakkeit, you have the chutzpah, so to speak, to become a mashpia and have an effect on people around you. So that's in chutzpah yaske, l'ma'al yusta, that people are going to have that sense of chutzpah to be able to go beyond their limitations and beyond what should be expected of them. And then, so that's the chutzpah yaske. As far as the ne'orim p'nei zkenim yalbinu, it includes the point. What is a zokin zeshakon ha'chokma? A person has acquired the wisdom of Torah. But he has not yet accomplished, he has not yet achieved the ma'or shabat Torah, the illumination of Torah, which is Torah Sachsidus. So regarding that, he's still a youngster. So Na'orim, Pnei Zkenim Yalbinu, his youthfulness, the fact that he's a youth, that he's inexperienced in Torah Sachsidus, that will embarrass his zokinship, the fact that he's already an accomplished Talmud Chacham, and he'll realize he has to start, he's ready to start over even at square one in order to learn Torah Sachsidus. Continuing on halachas of traveling on a boat, so we started talking about last week that you're not allowed to leave beginning on Wednesday, unless it's for a dvar mitzvah. The truth is, by the way, I didn't really get into the details. First of all of this is only talking about when it's a boat that's run by goyim. If it's a boat that's run by Jews, then you have a whole nother matter. Back in the 50s, when boat travel was still common, not like nowadays where it's basically just cruises, that ever wrote many letters on that topic about the Zim Israeli line, that there was a problem traveling it on Shabbos because they can't stop the boat, they can't stop all the machinery on the boat for 25 hours. That ever says, I'm an electrical engineer, I know how these things work, and necessarily there's going to be Chilul Shabbos. When it's a boat run by goyim, then you don't have such an issue because then they're doing it for themselves, basically. But still, you have various considerations. Anyway, so we were talking about that's when it's a boat on the ocean, in general, on any body of salt water. When it's a river boat, for example, that kind of thing would be allowed even on Erev Shabbos, because the considerations that we said that during the first 3 days there's more likely to be danger, and therefore you may end up having to be Mechallel Shabbos, that's less likely to happen on a short trip like that, like on a river boat. Similarly, the other one that you don't get your sea legs and your seasick for the first couple of days, that also doesn't apply to short haul trips like that. So then you'd be allowed to go even Erev Shabbos. Now though, you do have an issue. If it's a small boat, you're going within 10 tefachim, then you can't go outside the tchum, and that would be no matter where you are. However, this is all only if you don't have to do any malacha on Shabbos, and so then it would be mutter to travel on such a boat. So what about cruises? So the truth is, cruises are not so simple, because you're not going for a dvar mitzvah. So if you leave any time before Wednesday night, then fine, you have a heter for it. But if they leave on Thursday or on Friday, and Yesharim also on Wednesday, then their taka can be an issue with it. So if I go on Sundays, then there's less of an issue with that, because anyway, you're leaving more than 3 days before Shabbos. Incidentally, by the way, you know, we know also a din that the Rebbe derived from this. What are we saying? One reason, again, why not to leave on a boat trip within 3 days before Shabbos is because you're going to be in a state of discomfort on Shabbos because of seasickness. By the same token, a person shouldn't go in, that I've never talked about the number of times, a person shouldn't go in for optional surgery within 3 days before Shabbos. Where it's necessary, then whatever, then you do whatever it is. But if it's something that could easily be postponed to a different time, then it should be done during the first half of the week for the same reason. Even today's boats, you still have. Sometimes you've had cruise ships that have run aground or flipped over or whatever. So it may not be as common as it was, but nevertheless, you still do have. And the fact is, even on cruise ships, you still have people still sometimes are seasick and getting their bearings and whatever for a couple of days. It may be more comfortable than it was in those times, but still, also, when you have a takana of the Chachamim, when you have a takana or a gzeira, then we don't necessarily change it just because circumstances have changed.
Okay.
Yeah.
The news is always announcing trouble with this.
Yeah, there's that too, yeah. Hey, Rav Hanan, I mean, Akash, I'm not so much for a whole exactly.